it is a very lonely job at the top. Prior to this, I'd never been a CEO before, so it's a slightly different change. So people that found companies probably know this, and I didn't, is that I am responsible for everything and nothing simultaneously. Right? So if it all fails, definitely on me. But if something needs to be fixed, I actually need someone else to step in and fix that. So my job is more about coaching than it is about, and mentoring than it is more about, you know, selling and operating and those sort of things. I have great people for that. We bought a company straight away. We started the journey to list. By 2021, we'd raised $20 million on an initial reverse listing sort of IPO. So it was effectively a float. At the time, we merged another company with us. So we now had sort of 120 staff from up from 32, and that was in the space of a year, and we raised some money. And then this is when the market's going sensationally, and it was a great story. It was one of the more successful IPOs of that year. We got up to $2 or something, and we raised money again. You know, find other groups of small businesses, find some kind of advisory board. I want to be proud of what we achieved, right? That's the thing that drives me.
Yeah.
Building us something that makes us proud. Never be afraid to ask for help. That's the hardest thing as a CEO you find. Never be afraid to say you don't know. Like, I can't come into a room and say I don't know what I'm doing 100% of the time. I'll lose my job in a heartbeat, right? But knowing when it's safe, knowing when to lean in and those sort of things, never be afraid to lean in.
Alex, how are you, my friend?
I'm well. Yourself?
Mate, I'm pumping on all cylinders at the moment. I'm excited for this discussion. I think we'll have a good chat. And the reason this is a bit of a slightly different conversation to some of our other guests, in that a lot of our guests have been entrepreneurs, and they have these different learnings of founding companies and so on. But you're, you know, a tried and true tested CEO of a listed company, Swoop. You've been through the corporate journey of managing and leading huge change, M&A, lots of experience that I think we can unpack today, which is a little bit different to some of our other guests. So I think there'll be this sort of unique discussion that I hope we can draw out, mate, if you're happy to play with me a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. The story of Alex, right, I would like to draw out of this today as well. So I might, just before we jump into Swoop, you know, Swoop's important in the context of our discussion. We're talking a lot about culture and how you're leading the business at the moment. But maybe tell us a bit about Alex before we get into business.
Sure. Look, Alex now, father, three children. We moved, probably a big thing for my life is that we moved during COVID from sort of Sydney, North Shore, up into the Hunter Valley. So that's moving, you know, entire family, changing schools, uprooting us all onto 40 acres. And it was a decision we had to make at the time. I've got three wonderful children, one with more special needs than the other. So we had to find the right environment for him. So a lot of our decisions about where we go are focused around our children and those sort of things. So finding them a good school where they could all be together in the community was very important. And they've thrived in that. That was in 2020. And then when you talk about Alex sort of outside of work is, I'm just a taxi driver, right? My kids are, I have two very high performing sports athletes in from 11 and 17 that are training 7 days a week on multiple sports.
Yeah, wow.
And we're just driving around from Sydney to, I was in Dubbo last weekend for state touch football. I'll be down in Sydney for athletics, for state athletics and those sort of things. So highly driven. And so, yeah, look, that's pretty much me. And then obviously my wife and is helping with that as well. So we share the burden. But that's us outside of that. And then we do a lot of camping, right? So we like to be out in the open rather than trying to put us into sort of hotels and those sort of things. Look, I'd love for someone just to do everything for me, but at some point I'm kind of like, okay, I'm bored of this. I want to just go sit on my own, too many people, those sort of things. So we enjoy the outdoors and the camping and that, and trying to get my kids to see as much of this country as we can before they won't sit in the car anymore.
Yeah.
So there's my daughter 17, and she'll probably watch this because she's actually very interested in me coming down here today, and she'll probably watch it. And I said, look, she probably won't come traveling with us, and she'll probably just be sitting there going, yeah, I'm done.
She might like a trip to, next time we do a podcast, we'll bring her down.
Excellent. She'll be down in Sydney for some kind of sport thing.
Yeah, I was going to say there'll be something going on. Where do they get their sporting side from? It's athleticism.
Yeah.
Look, you an ex-athlete?
I was okay.
Yeah.
I did reasonably well up until about 19, and then, you know, I sort of moved off it. My wife was a very good runner sort of going through. She was very athletic. We've sort of settled back, and obviously, you know, I'm sitting at a desk most days, so it's quite hard to keep that going. But I think there's a – whilst it's not open, there's a sort of level of competition that sort of – and drive that sits within – within me and my wife in terms of, you know, you don't sit in this job as CEO if you don't want to do something, right? Like there is a driven and ambition in my life that says, I want that job and I'll work every day to get there. And then you get there and it's still the job I want, which is fantastic. But yeah, so there's a drive there and then yeah, my kids get it too, right? They want to succeed. My youngest is fantastic, right? He will train every day because he wants to, not because he has to. So.
We'll probably get into your head about those sorts of things as we go along. But I think it sets the tone because you didn't describe yourself initially as CEO of Swoop. You didn't describe it. You described yourself as a human being. You actually described yourself as a taxi driver, to be fair. But it's interesting. Tell me more about what that says about you and you as a leader when we go back into the office, when we go into the career that you've had.
I mean, we're all human, right? I go into the office and I'm not the boss of everyone. I mean, I'm trying to be the leader. I do the best job I can.
Yep.
But these are smart people, right? We haven't hired idiots and have to tell them what to do every day. We've hired really smart people, fantastic people. And our job is to make sure they can do their job. And also remember that they're human. And I think COVID taught us that more than anything else, where we're starting to see people's lives. We're starting to see, you know, what are they going through at home? You know, what's happening in the background? What kids have they got running around? What pets have they got? Before that, you may have never considered it, right? You might have close people like my direct reports and people that I spend a lot of time with, I'd know about their lives. Yeah. But now I know a lot more about 150 people that work for me simply because they've let me into their homes. So, and it's important, right? Because sometimes we look at, and particularly leadership or just management, where someone's not performing and you realize it's not them, sometimes it's us, but it's also what's going on inside, outside their lives. Like we've got EAP programs, so I know generally what my staff are struggling with because we get data analytics back and it's how much of it is outside of work is fairly significant, right? This is an incredibly difficult time for most families in terms of the economy and everything else. Things just got harder. We've just come out of pandemic. People are worried. You know, so it's about supporting that and remembering that. So when you ask me, oh, I didn't say I was a CEO of Swoop, that takes up
big chunk of time.
Yeah. Probably 80% of my time and the 20% I'm a taxi driver. But, you know, I'm still human when I'm at work as I am when I'm at home, right? And some I like to think, and sometimes my staff will tell me, is that's why they like working with me.
Well, it's interesting you say that because there's so many conversations about people in that chair where that's the mindset that they bring to the role, right? It's the value in investing back into the human beings that work for us and that go on that journey with us, right? And now that journey, let's have a look at Swoop because that's the vehicle that all of these people are sitting in. That's the 80% of your time when you're not a taxi driver. And it all started pre-COVID, right?
Look, the company itself started as a fixed wireless provider called Cirrus Communications, Gosford based, so outside of Sydney, servicing, had 32 staff servicing sort of the east coast of Australia. It had some investment in 2019. I came in board early 2020 to manage that investment. And from there, we started an acquisition and listing journey, right? So I was, prior to this, I was a COO, so heavily in operations, background in engineering, working in telco space since 2000, so 24 years. And I got brought in to sort of run the operations and start to grow. And we sort of talked about at the time, we'd wait a couple of years, we'd get everything right, and then we'd list. Came on board. We changed our mind. We bought a company straight away. We started the journey to list. By 2021, we'd raised $20 million on an initial reverse listing sort of IPO. So it's effectively a float. At the time, we merged another company with us. So we now had sort of 120 staff from 32, and that was in the space of a year. And we raised some money. And then this is when the market's going sensationally and was a great story. It was one of the more successful IPOs of that year. We got up to $2 something and we raised money again. Another 46 million around October 21. And we use that to start buying other companies. So we've 9 acquisitions to date, a mixture of sort of other fixed wireless providers, a mobile MVNO, which we can talk about later, because that's a massive growth engine for us, and then some other wholesale sort of stories. But massive growth mainly through acquisition, and that creates a very unique non-founder based sort of conversation around how to bring culture together.
Yeah.
Because I didn't build the first company. I have built, though, with my team, this company, right? This is us coming together. And so we're effectively, and we talked about it, and we have talked about it as a leadership team, sort of we're effectively founding this company. It just happens to already be, you know, generating $90 million worth of revenue and 150 staff. But we're not so much starting from scratch, but we had to take a look at it, particularly last year, and say, this is what we are. This is what we want to be. This is how we want to do it. And now we're starting. Now everything's working. We say, well, now this is where we want to go.
It's interesting for a lot of founders. They're probably a little bit jealous of that because you leapfrog the first phase.
Yeah.
And you get to go into the phase that might be potentially a little bit fun. But it's interesting, and I use fun with a little smirk. Take us back a couple of steps because you were hired into that role, right? And you're telling me that you've walked in the door and all of a sudden the game plan's subtly different. Now, you're a guy that's been through M&A many times. You've been through that sort of journey. That would have – did that excite you? Like what happened when you got in and go, oh, hang on, how did it all play out?
Excite's probably a good word. Also, I'm a little fearful, right? So I'm – prior to this, I'd never been a CEO before, so it's a slightly different change. So people that found companies probably know this, and I didn't, is that I am responsible for everything and nothing simultaneously. Right? So if it all fails, definitely on me. But if something needs to be fixed, I actually need someone else to step in and fix that. So my job is more about coaching than it is about and mentoring than it is more about, you know, selling and operating and those sort of things. I have great people for that. So that was very interesting. And then for me, the next steps when my chairman who, and I have a very supportive board and you know, they're very smart people and they've done a lot of capital raising and they've been in the public markets. And so I'm learning from them when they said, we're thinking that we should do this because now is the right time. And they weren't wrong, right? Everyone was IPOing in 21. It was the best time to do it. And then considering what then came, it was a fantastic time. So, you know, we don't stress today because we have cash because we raised it then. So a fantastic journey. But then when we said we're going to go off and we're going to buy a company, I said, fine. Like I'm 50 to 60 integrations in, right? Like looking at companies, how they go together. You know, the big thing always starts with people, but it's always the first thing you forget, right? The first thing you go to is synergies, network, things like that. And then you go, why isn't this working? And you went, oh yeah, because our people structure, what we want them to do, what we want to be, all these things, you forget to say that, right? You forget to tell them.
Mm. So. Well, 50 or 60 in, can we pull that apart a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, from start to finish. Sometimes I was at a company called Vocus. We had acquired another 13 sort of businesses over the time that I was there. And I was in COO by the time I left in operations. And we merged with another company that had also done sort of 13 or 14 acquisitions. So that gets me to 26. And then I left there, went to another company that had bought companies that hadn't yet been integrated. So you kind of, this is the only place where I have sort of started, okay, this is the valuation, this is the negotiation, the DD, this is okay, now fully integrating. But I've learned different things along the way.
Mm. So what, yeah, tell us about that. Because there are some people listening to this and going, M&A might be on the cards for them. It might even be foreign to them and it's not something they've ever experienced. Or they might have been in the business where they've been at the back end and they've seen, plenty of people have bad experiences on the back end of these, particularly as an employee.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, tell us that, when you sit down and you say, that's about to happen in my organization, and you sort of fast-tracked through it before, but mm-hmm. like break it down a little bit further.
Sure.
What do you think about in terms of maximizing the value of the exercise but also ensuring sustainability of the exercise?
Yep. Planning is key and sometimes we do it well and sometimes we don't. The question we've now realized that we've started to ask is at the end of this 12, 24 months down the track, what does success look like? What are we actually trying to do by doing
this? It's a simple question.
Very simple question. So after however many I've done, we've actually only now just started asking that, right? And it's being really clear, particularly when it's no longer, when you get bigger. So where, I'm a manager or in an executive team of 9 of people, myself and 8 others, and they're also working on their divisions. And when it's no longer just me doing these things, I need to sort of bring that together. So that's why I've had to start asking that question, because they need to look at the things. Whereas before it was just, I'm just going to plan all this and it was me and 1 other person or me and 2 other people. Now it's all of us. And those questions start to become very important why we're doing it.
What bubbles up typically? That success question's got multiple layers.
Absolutely.
To it. So what bubbles up first when you start putting that on the table? What do you notice?
Okay. How do you not damage your own culture? We've spent a lot of time getting to where we wanted to be and still getting better. Like we're nowhere near perfect. We've just sort of, after 9 acquisitions, just sort of tidied up our values and effectively relaunching them because whilst bringing 9 companies of small companies together is easy, you lose something when it's that many, right? There's a... Not everybody that comes from a small business in regional Australia feels the same way or acts the same way or things. You have to kind of have those conversations about behaviors and values. And we want to be here, but how do we want to get here? How do we want to treat our people? How do we want to treat our customers? All these sort of things. Our suppliers, they're also very important. So that becomes the first question. So we're going to acquire this business. How big is it? What impact is it going to have? How do we make sure that our culture doesn't, you know, go backwards or get to a point where we don't want it to be? But more importantly, how do we bring them along for the journey? Because success for us is a year from now, you know, they are behaving in the way that we want to behave. And look, people generally like working with my company, I believe. And you want them to keep, you want that feeling of engagement. And we do staff surveys. We know what our engagement scores are. We measure it several times throughout the year. We put initiatives in when the staff tell us what we should be doing. We want to make sure that's continuing and the people coming along for the journey also believe in that. And then be very clear about it. So your next question is, how do you make sure that happens? I said, well, you'd be very clear from the upfront what you're looking for. And you give people the choice. And some of the others, some of the bigger ones that I've done, not here but elsewhere, you talk about, you know, this is where we're going. This is what we want from you. Now is a really good time to decide whether or not you're on or off the bus. Because it's, if you're not, if you don't want to be in a company that's fast moving, if you don't want to be in a company that's going to change, we suggest now is the time that you step off. Because, and wish everyone the best, but you're far better off doing that. I mean, you would have spoken to most people. Most people would say not enjoying your job is probably one of the biggest impacts of, you know, the rest of your life, right? We spend so much time doing it. If you don't enjoy where you work, it's going to hurt you outside of work, your relationships, everything else. So,
absolutely. And it's interesting because I'm sure the, and I'd love you to unpack this because I think this is something so, because you've had exposure to this type of question. The type of acquisition influences how you attack that as well, right? If it's a founder-led, if there's an executive team, if they'll be integrated or not, if they're fearful of their future and their jobs or not, what sort of synergies there are in terms of systems. But yeah, if we dive into the cultural side of that decision-making part, right, you're dealing with potentially an executive team who are employees in most cases.
Yep.
But tell us about some of the dynamics. Tell us some stories of where you've maybe seen some bad outcomes and tell us maybe where it's really worked well.
Yeah, most of the acquisitions at Swoop have all been sort of founder-led type acquisitions. So there's a conversation very simply. What are you looking for out of this? How long do you want to stay on board? How do we get the value? Most people, and I say this with all due love, is once they pay you several million dollars, coming to work every day is not the thing they're thinking, right? And that's okay. But, you know, we want
often they've built it for that reason. Sometimes
they have built it for that reason. We do some of the script transfers as well. So they're taking shares in our company as part of the transaction. So they don't want to see this fail. They want this to be successful. So that's actually the best way to get people engaged, founders engaged, sorry, to make sure that, you know, they're staying at least on the journey to make sure that it's successful as it possibly can be. After a couple of years, they're probably tapped out. And I don't blame them, right? If I had worked my ass off for 15 years to get my company to here on my own and I finally sell it and now I've got support and take leave and all those sort of things, yeah, I'd probably stop too.
Yeah, it makes sense. And do you comfortably accept that as the CEO? Do you have those honest conversations?
I usually have them before they start.
Yeah, because right? you've seen it before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, I know how it ends, how it potentially could end. I don't, and, you know, if I believe that, you know, they're the ones damaging the culture and the business, I'll probably have that conversation with them too. So that's the other thing. And sometimes they're better off for it, right? We'll give you this money. We'll give you these shares. And if you step away, we'll take the value that you've handed to us and we'll make it here. And sometimes that's had to happen. It's never easy, right? Like it's not an easy conversation, but you know, this is part of the role, right? You can't, the harder conversations are the ones that you have to have.
The ones you have to lean into.
Yeah, the ones you have to have. The easy ones, we can do that. The hard ones, you prep, you sit down, you someone across the table and said, look, I don't think this is going to work between us and I think it's better that you move on. When you talk about executive teams, you have to figure out what that structure is going to look like, right? Most of the time, I would like to keep my executives, but if there's someone on that team that, you know, can do that role better and they may not have been able to shine because of the things like, you generally don't have two CEOs, that never works. But other than that, you know, we kind of figure it out, but you have to do it early. Where I've seen things not work out is where that clarity of who's doing what and who's in charge, and not just from my own acquisitions, but I've seen it in my industry where they kind of, two people have the same role and no one's really quite sure who's doing what.
And they're overlapping.
It's overlapping and it's failure, right? So you have to make that clear.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard though, right? We don't get a lot of time between, by the time everyone knows that this thing is happening to the time that it's happening is at best probably 4 months, but less, right? So you have to make those decisions quickly. You spend some time, you know, but I can't generally sit there and talk to you about a transaction that you're not yet aware of.
Yeah.
So I have to, yeah. So it's hard.
It's and there I'd imagine there's times where there's false starts as well, right?
Yeah, we've made mistakes. Like we the good thing about going through quite a few early in my career, I say early sort of midway through my career. Well, I'm assuming I'm midway now. About 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that we made a couple of those mistakes where you leave people in place for longer than you should. You don't have the conversations because they weren't easy to have. You know, the culture doesn't align because, you know, you had two bosses or you didn't have clarity about who was actually in charge, all those sort of things. I've learned that now. And you try and you get, look, I always wish every time I go in that we can all stay along and all be friends, but nah, that's not how it works.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, you've used the word culture a few times.
Yes.
And maybe, again, we talk about this a lot on the podcast, the word culture, but maybe from the point of view of the Swoop culture, tell us a bit about what that looks like if you were to define it from the point of view of, you know, there's values, but also the systems that uphold it, things that you guys do that tell you that you're at Swoop.
Look, it's I'd love to say we nail it. Look, to be honest, we don't, right? Today, we have a lot of work in front of us, but the good thing is we're committed to it. So that's sort of somewhat part of our culture, right? Often when people come in after buying nine companies, I bring someone in new to run a section and they go, yeah, you're right. I can definitely see where some of the challenges are, but my God, everyone here just wants to get on and fix it, right? So that's part of our culture. And that's actually not written down in our values. But the desire to act on it kind of is we've got one that's excellent mavericks, which is, you know, always try and do better with what we have sort of thing. But that just, you know, everyone wanting to do better than where we currently are, and driving us forward every single day is part of what makes being at Swoop Swoop. There's some things in that I believe being in the industry for as long. We haven't spoken about my product, but very briefly, we do fixed wireless in regional areas, high margin product. That's uniquely ours. We are the best fixed wireless provider in Australia because there aren't that many of us. It's easy to be. We also resell NBN and we resell mobile through our MVNO and some other products. When you're a reseller, and it makes up part of our business, you have to actually be really good at customer service because why else would anyone buy from me or Telstra or Optus or whoever that happens to be? And it's because we have to be better at that. So putting the customer first in a lot of your decisions, also, you know, you're looking for people to come on board that also believe that that is important for them. If they don't care about and they can't put themselves in the customer's shoes, regardless of the role, that's anything from, yes, absolutely customer service, but also if you're in finance and you're just thinking, I've just got to get this done, but what is the impact that happens? It's not going to work out, right? You'll get frustrated. So it's about focusing on that. So you know, all of my executive believe the same. So I'm not fighting with them to do so.
Yeah. If we can wind back to that point about commitment, because it's interesting what you talked about there being a regional player.
Yes.
And also being a reseller, so being so customer focused. If you look at the secret sauce around the type of people you seem to attract, that commitment's underpinned by some thought process or belief. What do you think the belief is? Why do, beyond fixing stuff and getting things better, what else is there that they're connected to?
Yeah, there's an element. So we have goals, values and things, but part of our purpose, and we got very good at, you know, defining what we wanted to be. It's about connecting people and improving lives. And what we realized coming out of, or in COVID and coming out, people just want to be connected to their communities and help people, or the people that work for us just want to be connected to their communities and actually help people. And we're trying to help them do that. And we're now looking at things like, come off the back of an engagement survey last year, we identified that, you know, our staff aren't feeling as connected to their communities. Yes, they live there, but, you know, they haven't really been in the office, so they're not connected together, but they're also not connected there. And looking at programs like that, what can we do to help bring our staff together and go out and help other people? That's the sort of thing that we're now starting to do, and it resonates with our staff and it resonates with our communities. And we're not a national company, even though I have an office in Brisbane, Newcastle, if you think about this one, Sydney, Melbourne, Warragul, not yet Adelaide, Nuriupta, which is in the Barossa.
Okay. So very East Coast at the moment. Perth. Oh, Perth. I didn't hear Perth there. Okay. Perth. Sorry, I missed Perth.
So the Barossa, Perth, and then a couple of staff in Geraldton.
Yeah.
You know, we're spread everywhere, but everywhere. We're not a national company. What we typically are is we're a whole bunch of smaller communities that want to feel connected both, you know, within the area that they're in, but also to the rest of the organization. So my role and my team's role as leaders is to help them connect to each other, but also just tie some of the glue to just the themes of what we're doing. It's otherwise, you know, you can get Brisbane running off in one direction and Perth running off in another. And those.
Yeah, the word glue was coming to mind when you were describing it. So the process of glue. So as a CEO, you often hear these stories about the CEO that walks the floor or the CEO that has a particular style.
It's a very dispersed floor.
It's a big floor. It's a big floor. So what's your style? Tell us about what it feels like to work in an environment under Alex.
We should bring someone else in for that one. But no, how I think, look, obviously very open, transparent communication is key for me. So I will, apart from being publicly listed, I will try and tell my team, my staff, my company what I'm thinking and what we think we should do. But then also being smart enough to know that just because I said it doesn't make it right, I don't have all the information. So I might think, look, I think we should go off and sell this in this area. And then someone much smarter than me will have the data and go, yeah, that's not going to work. So being open enough to admit that I don't have to be right, that always helps. We do better for it, right? If I was thinking about all the ideas and everyone was coming to me, we'd crash and burn, right? No human being can. And my recommendation to anyone watching and any leader is don't try and do it all yourself. You don't have to. Everyone wants to help. You know, no one walks into work going, you know what? I'm here every day to do a bad job. Everybody wants to do a good job, right? They want to be connected. They want to feel that they're achieving something.
I share that often with a lot of teams, and I'll say occasionally there's a corporate psychopath that might do something very, very strange, but 99.99%.
I say everyone.
Yeah, everyone. But you're right. Like, and I think that's such an interesting way to look at people, because we also have to navigate as leaders underperformance, people that are not connecting with the culture. You talked about those hard conversations. What have you learned about, you know, you said asking for help is so important. What's the hardest conversation you've had to have as you've moved along your leadership journey?
Underperformance is generally my hardest one, particularly when it's not an obvious underperformance. Underperformance in friends is probably the most difficult conversation I've ever had to have. And that becomes difficult, right? You've worked with someone for many years and they're just not achieving what you need them to achieve. Sometimes it's always on me, because, you know, as a leader and a mentor and a manager, your job is to get the best out of the people. But part of it's also on them. And so having those conversations is always the most difficult. Working with people for a very long period of time, and some people have worked for a long period of time, when the business has changed, particularly I've been here for 4 years, but I've got people that I've worked with for 20 and multiple companies. If the business changes and they're no longer, no part of a lot of the new company, they don't want to change it, but it's also our lives change outside of work, right? They're the most difficult conversations.
What do you find difficult about them?
Having to tell people that you care about that, you know, this might be the end of their journey, or they're not meeting your expectations. Nobody likes to hear that.
Yeah. I get the impression that you talked about it before with the M&A piece and the founder piece, that you like to make sure those expectations are clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you've had them, there's often that internal dialogue that's like, oh, I'm a bit nervous about this. I care for this person. I don't want to offend them, all of the above, right? But I'd imagine the expectations are not necessarily the problem. Is that a problem, or do you think it's because I see this in lots of leadership conversations. People actually end up expecting the conversation anyway. But I'd love your experience.
Most people are aware something is coming, whether they're ready to admit it or not. I'm not sure. I think in most reflection, I've never had redundancies when we've been shifting businesses. I haven't had to do it here, but in other businesses when we've been shutting down business lines, they're the surprises, and people don't see that coming. They are also incredibly difficult, like disappointing people, and particularly when it's not their fault, right? Markets change. You've moved out of a product line. Sorry, but 20 of you are no longer here. But you handle it with respect and sit everyone down and explain why and those sort of things. But what makes them the other conversations about performance and expectations harder is it really is that one-on-one relationship, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you have a beer 1 minute and the next minute we've put our professional hat on and we're having a different conversation.
Pretty much, yeah. And you have to do it, right? And not doing it. And most, not most leaders, but I think most people that struggle with leadership, that's the difficult one. Having hard conversations and things. They're coming up with a business strategy, coming up with a vision. You know, they're I say easy. I mean, you're just throwing around ideas and hoping one of them sticks, right? You have a conversation with people, you figure out what it is, but
put smart people in the room,
right? Mm. But having professional conversations about, you know, people's performance and expectations, that is by far the hardest. Because that's when it's the most personal. Right. And you're crossing that boundary between business and profession and personal self,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. And we, as you said, you started this conversation being human, right?
Yeah.
That's you can't take that away from your
yourself. No, and I wouldn't want to. I remember having to having a conversation with someone, not so much recently, but when I've had to do this before, and someone looked at me and said, "You seem really broken up about it." I went, "You should hope so, because if this comes easy, we're all in trouble, right? If I can easily have those difficult conversations, and not show any emotion, there's an element where I have to hold back, right? But you don't want to, you don't want to work for a psychopath.
Totally,
it's just you want me to feel, you want this to be hard. If this was easy, this is a problem, because then, you know,
then you really aren't connected to your people. Yeah, exactly. And you know, I often hear a similar conversation with people around imposter syndrome. So yeah. It's actually healthy. It means that you care. It means that you're actually questioning yourself on how ready you are. Yeah. And maybe that's an interesting question for you. You know, where have you found the biggest shift of gear in your career? When did you go through a moment like, oh, hang on, I might be a bit out of my depth here, or maybe it's not even out of my depth, just I've had to go through a rapid learning curve.
First month after listing.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. So sitting in a role, publicly listed CEO. Holy shit, I'm a publicly listed CEO, right? You don't, that was probably a dream or plan of mine at some point, but you know, you're sitting there in that chair. And yeah, imposter syndrome is a real thing, right? You just think, why did these people just give me all this money to run this company? I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. You then, I have coaches. I have people around me. I don't sit there for long. Yes. Don't worry, everyone.
And you don't have absolutely no idea, but I guess.
But you do think that. Right?
But you do feel that way.
I am not ready for this role. Mm. And my very good coach, and I'll tell him, I said this about him, we'll watch it later on. I said, he walked me through it, right? I said, well, to do this job, what do you think you need? And then he says, well, you've got those things. I went, oh, you're right. And then there's a point in time when I just went, you know what? I may not be the best CEO in Australia. That's not my job. I am the best CEO for this company. And I know that. My team hopefully feels that. And they do occasionally tell me I'm okay. But, you know, like, I am the best CEO for this company. And so I believe that. Then every now and then I think, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. What are we doing? And I go, no, you know what? I'm the best CEO for this company.
I'm the man for it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might outgrow me. You know, if we go fast enough, the company will get to a certain size. That being said, you know, this is the smallest team I've had to manage in the last 10 years, right? So it's not, I haven't yet reached that point where I'm nervous.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think it sounds like there's a lot more in the tank. Yeah. What excites you about the future?
There's a tagline at the back end of my investor presentation that says, and rightly so, we are one of the most experienced board and management teams in the telecommunications industry in Australia. You look at what we've done together, and some of us have been doing this at a couple of companies. Mm. And I've got some new members in the team that are kicking goals, and they're fantastic. But not for a $100 million revenue company. We're talking, we've run billion-dollar companies before. And getting from here to there is what excites us.
Mm. Well, this is something I was going to ask you, because you've worked with a group of people on and off. And I don't expect you to talk about them individually, but I'd love to know, if you want to, you're welcome to, if you want to tell some stories. But I'm wondering what has kept that glue together? What has meant that you've been on journeys with a few people in multiple environments for multiple stages of company maturity?
Well, I think you and I spoke about this obviously before we came here. I've actually only had two bosses for the last 20 years, right? So I've worked for, now I am the CEO, but two different CEOs, for one and then another, and one then another. So various things about them excited me. I had one who, Bevan Slattery, amazing visionary, right? Like he sees things many years out and then really drives us to get there. And then I now work, my chairman, Jay Spenceley, I work for at Vocus. I don't know what it is about him, and he's on a plane right now, so maybe watch this later, is his ability to get the best out of us and just understand things far quicker than anybody else is something that I aspire to be. And I'm real, what am I successful thing? I'm relatively quick, right? I can pick things up reasonably quickly, and he's at many levels above me, and just watching him work and working with him and seeing things is fantastic. So I would generally say that, you know, I am a relatively good operator. I'm very good at doing, you tell me where you want to go and I can absolutely get you there 9 times out of 10, and off we go. And so that's why I get brought along. And then there's others along the journey that have sort of, there's one member of my board, Matt Hollis. He and I, every time he moves, I move. And it's not because, you know, we outside of work, we spend all this time together, but inside of work, we have an incredibly healthy respect for each other. And there's a story I tell where, you know, we have that, we can say almost anything to each other in an open room, anything, you know, that was a stupid idea, whatever that happens to be. And you don't then go, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. You go, you know what? If he said it, he's probably right. Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, we move on.
It's nice to have that.
It is.
Do you feel blessed? How do you feel about it?
Look, at the moment where I am at work, I'm sort of thinking of the people around me immediately below me, and I'm actually feel very glad and happy that I've built the team I've built. But the people above me and sort of the ones that bring me along, I forget, to be honest. So I apologize to them. And then we get together every now and then. They keep me accountable, right? So if you're a CEO with a board, you've still got bosses, right? They're still, you know, they're driving the best out of me and for this, for our shareholders, but also for the company. They get what I get, which is if we mess this up, 150-odd people don't have a job. Right. And we all feel that pressure. And so we're just trying to do the best we can and make the best decisions. So I do feel blessed when somebody asks me that question, but most times, no, I'm busy, just head down and off we go, or head up if that's where we happen to be.
Yeah,
But no, I am very lucky to have, and my board are like a brilliant group of people, right?
I love it. As you know, there's small business owners that listen to this, entrepreneurs, founders, all sorts of people listen to this. If you were to describe three characteristics of a really good CEO, right, just the piece, whether it's that you believe you have them or not, or whether it's you've seen it, but what are the three that you would say, if you land that, you're doing really well?
Right. Humble, as in you don't have to believe that you are the best or you know everything. So people will follow that. So you're authentic, people believe in that. You got to be smart, right? You have to be good at something. Yeah, you can't. If you're just average at everything, you won't necessarily get that sort of respect. You know, whatever that happens to be. I have that in some areas, but not in others. But most founders are really smart at either be at the marketing or sales. They get their product. They know their markets. So they're very good at that. So that always helps. And you asked for three, two, humble and smart. Look, I think great leaders and people that will follow. It's an element of servant leadership, right? So you have to know, well, I believe that you should be in the role to serve the people that work for you more so than will work with, because people follow that. But also, you know, don't forget that I'm not here so that they can do my bidding. I'm only as good as them. Right. The most, and someone says, oh, what are the best parts that you've ever done? It wasn't becoming CEO. It was when, you know, my first person they ever managed was able to do the things that I taught them to do. And she's now incredibly successful in the industry, in our industry. She doesn't work for us, but you know, that gives you pride, right? And I've watched people's successes that have, you know, they've come in as contractors and they've been my first project manager at a small company. They're now running the teams that I used to run, you know, and that's incredibly, incredibly humbling and proud that I was able to help those people on that journey.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more about that, because it's so common to see servant leadership as a conversation in 2024. It's, you know, as I say, people in that chair have had that mindset or approach or philosophy, I guess, to the way they've approached leadership. And it's not that authoritarian or dictatorship that you might, you know, associate with old school, you know, leadership. But, you know, in actualizing servant leadership, you know, in terms of bringing it to life, and you would have taught this to some of your emerging leaders and so on, but what's in that toolkit? What do you see? You know, you talked about some of these people that have come up the chain around you. What does it look like?
Sure. It's empathy. You have to be able to put yourself in the position of that person when you're telling them to do something or coaching or whatever it has to be. How are they seeing it? You know, so how do my behaviors impact them? Not, you know, and this is one of the biggest conversations I have. It's not about, you know, necessarily what I said or what things. How did I make you feel when I said it, right? How did I deliver that message? You know, how did I deliver that feedback? And how did you receive that feedback? You know, if I come to you and I say, oh, you didn't do this right, the first thing you go, no, I definitely did. So, well, I'm never going to give you feedback again, right? So it's those sort of things. Knowing, you know, how my behaviors impact other people is probably the biggest thing. And then when you're making decisions, and this is the hardest one, it's, you know, why are you making them, right? Is it to serve me? Is it to serve them? Is it to serve the company? Is it to serve the shareholders? Is it to serve the customers? You'll have to make trade-offs, and it's not always the same trade-off. So it's not something like I say, well, only ever support your staff first and then drop everything else. In the situation you're in, you'll have to make those decisions and what you think is best for the longevity of the company. Ultimately, you know, we don't win in business, right? We just keep going. Whoever lasts the longest wins. Right? It's a Simon Sinek thing, right?
Yeah, it was not a game of not losing, but also playing for something that's perhaps
and then
moving a moving dial, right?
Yeah, as I get older and you know I have kids and things like that, I stop thinking about the what am I doing and why, and more about why am I doing it. And you forget when I spend my life looking at spreadsheets, at revenue figures and sales figures and all those sort of things, and then every now and then, someone much smarter than me will sit me down and go, why are you doing all this? I went, because I believe X. And what I believe is, you know, making people's lives better. You know, that's why we do what we do. Connecting to those communities, you know, connecting to my staff and those sort of things. So
now you're in a new community, I'm a Hunter.
Yes. And I don't sell any services there, but sure.
But, you know, you probably getting connected to it, I'd imagine, over the last few years.
The kids' sport, absolutely. Like we, and so, yeah, I like it because I get to, you know, connect to new people, meet new people, and people have started asking me questions that actually I'm able to answer about my experiences, right? You know, they're small business owners that are thinking of merging and doing other things, and they say, hey, you've done this how many times, what should I do here? And you know, that's incredibly makes me feel incredibly proud and humbling to go, holy crap, you know, someone actually, you know, values my opinion. Yeah. And the things that I just do because you know someone much smarter than me taught me, someone else is interested in this, right? So they're really cool. Yeah, so it's mainly kids' sport, right? You just constantly, that's where we meet everyone.
Yeah, well, it's the great connector.
Well, it's interesting. So we moved during COVID, right? So you didn't connect.
Yeah.
That was probably the hardest thing. We're a brand new community and you know no one. And I live on property in without many neighbours, that sort of thing, because it's in the national park. So I know my neighbours, but there's only two of them.
Yeah, okay. So you got to go into town, then go to sport. You know, get to the yeah.
And the sport's not local. Sport's half an hour away and the school's half an hour away and all those sort of things, so.
Like the kids would be enjoying, they'd be learning a lot about themselves, I'd imagine, in that environment.
I think the big thing for them is more of a balance, right? You know, seeing people from, and when you're in smaller towns, the demographics change very, very quickly. When you're in Sydney, particularly North Shore of Sydney, it is particularly one type of demographic, you know, socioeconomic and those sort of things. You don't get exposed to a lot of other things. And I didn't want my children growing up thinking this was how everyone lived, right? This is not how everyone lives.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Perspective is so powerful.
So I'll continue to spoil them, but I want them to know that they're spoiled.
Yeah.
That is the nature of the thing, right? Yeah, you know, not everybody has what they have.
Well, talking about not everyone has what they have, if you look at what you have now and you're quite remote, you've got this satellite structure. Mm. How have you navigated this whole transition from COVID and maintain the effectiveness in your culture? Because it's the conversation that if you look on things like LinkedIn, if you talk to the average employee, this comes up a lot. So wondering how you guys are navigating it.
I think you said whether or not we're successful, and I'm not sure that we are.
Okay.
Our engagement survey says otherwise. I mean, we're growing, our engagement's growing up. We're 10% better than we were last year. We want to be 10% better this year. What really came up is that connection.
Mm.
How do we navigate it? It's effort, right? Focused effort too, because if you leave everything to everyone's devices, they still don't connect, right? So it's helping our staff come back together. It's not mandating, well, I don't believe it's mandating come back into work. Most managers and leaders I speak to still are saying mandate work. And I go, yeah, look, I don't agree. Good news is my executive team also don't agree with that particular thing. So we're not fighting internally with it, but it's about encouraging people to come back. They actually want to. People actually want to come back into the office. People actually want to be connected. Hardest thing for COVID was I saw you on a screen. I think you and I spoke about it just before. This is my first interview face-to-face. Face-to-face,
yeah.
You know, I raised, $40 million over Zoom. It was incredible. But, you know, you just don't connect with people, right? So,
and does that mean that you're creating, are you creating some unique methods to connect? So it's like social events or structures that might just feel different? I don't know.
I don't know if they're any different. We're just doing probably the things that we used to do before, but we haven't done them for 3 years. So absolutely social events, right? So organizing things for people to come in and then just encouraging them to picking days. You know, what's interesting is I don't have to, right? I've got champions and leaders in these offices that go, you know what? Come in. You come in once and you get the vibe and you're like, I miss this. You know, it's difficult because we got used to working from home and me coming to the office is a very long trip, but it is for any of the offices that we come in, but it's worth it, right? You see the people, you see them face to face and worth it. And people want that and they're managing themselves. So there is a social connection. We want to make sure we're encouraging people to come in, you know, give them the time off work to do something. We haven't done it yet, but obviously that connecting to communities, that taking time off to go do something to help other people together, rather opposed to, you know, you can, and it's a conversation that I'm having with my team, my exec team at the moment, which is, look, we could donate or give money, but it's easy. You know, why don't we just be better citizens in terms, particularly to take something like environmental, is rather than, you know, give money to environmental funds, why don't we just look at our own footprint? What can we reduce? Do those sort of things. When you talk about, and we're all about helping people, when you can and connecting to people, you know, let's step out of the office. Let's go help some people rather than donate to charities. And we will absolutely, you know, we're very supportive of our individuals that want to support whatever charity. We encourage everyone to tell me. I will announce it at every single time I have a company meeting and say, this person's doing this and throw the links up. But, you know, I want to bring people together and then talking about it. That's probably the last one is don't do it in isolation. Don't do it in an executive team. Don't do it in a senior team. Go talk to people. Ask them what they want.
Well, I was actually about to ask you that because the one of the observations I've had in various cultures, particularly when there's a lot of change, is that these, when it's done quite effectively, and there's no perfect, there's not like, you know, 100% engagement score, but the environments where there's people that are connected to the organization and dealing with change as productively as they can, there's often quite a strong and consistent communication from the top. How do you organize your thinking when you consider what you communicate about, how often you communicate, how often, like, and how do you bring that balance of, you know, connectedness in the conversation versus performance in the conversation?
Sure. I not that we do it extremely well, and we got good feedback last time. So meeting with the whole staff and recording it once a month. That's it. We have various messages. We want to talk about what's going on, what's coming up. I was away in January and we still had a staff meeting, and apparently it was one of the best ones ever. And it's because they sort of changed the approach. They got more people in. So it's not just me talking. It's getting everyone to talk. But then also, if I do that too much, then I get the, but where's Alex? So it's balancing me talking and other people talking and sharing the messages. People just want to know what's going on, but also how does their work contribute to the goal or where we're going and those sort of things. So talking about that and helping people connect to that. A lot of the work we're doing sort of as a performance level at the moment is about setting those goals and keeping people accountable. We're working the five dysfunctions of a team throughout the business. We're somewhere around accountability at the moment. They're unaware. They can watch this video and figure out why, and now they're all going to go read the book. But, you know, I like the story of that.
It's a great book.
Lencioni writes brilliantly. I like all of his books. Not all of them necessarily apply, but that one in particular. And that is where I spend most of my time, you know, getting that in my team. And that accountability one's a hard one, right? You're busy just going, and then you're kind of like, hang on, what did I say I would do? I was being very busy.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, let's write the goals down. Let's figure out what it is we want to do. By the way, we're doing this in March, right? Yeah. You know, it's happening in March. And so having that conversation.
Yeah. I'll have to remember now, but I think for the audience, it's probably worth, you know, if you five dysfunctions of the themes, you got results, accountability.
So start at the bottom.
Trust.
You've got trust.
Yes.
Trust. It's either
commitment
or conflict. So one of the two. So it's usually conflict first.
Then commitment.
So, so you got to trust everyone. So being vulnerable helps, right? So being very open about what you're doing. The conflict is actually having those difficult conversations. So when someone says, oh, I'm not going to turn up tomorrow, you go, mate, this is a really important meeting. You know, I need you to turn up, or I didn't achieve this result. So, well, why not? Why am I only finding out now? All those sort of wonderful things. What we're talking about, commitment. So being committed to both that journey and the company itself, and then you get to accountability. So what goals are you setting? And then you get to results. And not that we're not focused on results, but, you know, really bedding in all of those layers as you go. And it takes time. This has been a journey that my team and I have been on probably for 18 months or 2 years. Yeah. And that's just the nine of us. And then we've got to do that with 150 other people.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because one of the things Lencioni talks about when he goes to the results layer is the idea that the result that you're working towards is not just your marketing team or your sales team or your division X. It's helping everyone really connect to the ultimate vision of
that
the whole
one team's also an important part of the thing. It's easier for me because it is one team, it is one executive team, but working with my team about being one team is something I have to often remind ourselves of. And that's usually where most of the conflicts in the business come up, right? Where it's not that operations is fighting with sales, is that both are trying to achieve a result, which is deliver something better for the customer, but they've both got heaps of work on.
Yeah.
You know, they're both, you know, I know this is the most important thing for you, but it can't be the most important thing for me because this is the most important thing for me. And understanding that systems view of an organization and understanding that just because this is hurting me right now, I have to think, well, what resources will it take to fix it? And that's where we all struggle.
Yes.
Easier job for me because I get to see a lot more. Harder job for everyone else in the organization.
Yeah, and there's an emotional connection there and it's a natural conflict and it's normal. You see it in all organizations. It's just how well that's being managed, right?
We believe in group goals, right? So, you know, your bonuses and your STIs aren't just tied to what you do. It's what we achieve. You know, if we all miss this target, then we all get nothing. That is how this works. There are certain elements, but it's a much smaller percentage. So sort of with most of us, it's about 80% is what the group, what the company achieves, what the group achieves.
Yeah,
well, and only 20%.
I like that. Because you diminish the solo run, don't you?
You do. And, you know, I'm not working with people that are just trying to achieve their own thing. Well, I don't believe I am, and I don't believe they are either.
Yeah,
so
they wouldn't be there otherwise.
Well, it's what works for us, right? We now have a highly engaged executive team that is moving on to a highly engaged senior management team, which then leads on to highly. It's what we all want to do. I want to turn up to work and work with the people I work with. So,
and on that, what excites you about the next few years ahead? Right? Let's say if we were sitting here in 2 or 3 years time, what would you like to be talking about?
Sure. The journey will be a good one. So the journey for us to date, you know, I joined a company, we're figuring it all out, we're merging with things, everything was a mess. Last 12 months, we're achieving, right? We focused on what we wanted to do, we picked our products, we picked our markets and off we went. And so we've done that. So I'm no longer worried that everything's on fire. I'm no longer worried that I'm not going to have a job tomorrow. I'm no longer worried that we're going to run out of money. I know where it's all coming from. All of those simple things that you think, that's just a business, they're done. So, and now's a perfect time to be sitting here across from you because I'm actually now looking at what am I trying to achieve in 3 and 5 years' time? And me being me and working with the people I do is we kind of go, well, I can get us to here, right? And if I buy some things, I can probably get us to here. So why don't we just aim here, right? And that's the bit. I don't know how yet. I've got a good team. We'll figure that out. You know, I can easily achieve, you know, 100, 200% growth from where we are today. That's done. We know how we can do that. We've done that before. We can just do that again. Some of it's organic. Some of it's through acquisition. And then we sat down, it was literally last week, and I went, well, we're about to go talk about strategy with my team next week and my executive team and then my senior leaders below that and then my board all next week. It's a very busy week next week. What are we going to tell them? And we went, well, we kind of know how we get here. We're going to go here. And it is 3 years. So talking about how we got there and what else did we learn along the way? You know, you can't just do the same thing that we're doing today. So yes. Figuring all that out is going to be incredibly exciting. What we do today will be incredibly successful. We want to be whatever is more than incredibly, right? We want to be significantly successful. We want to blow it out of the water again.
We want to outperform.
Outperform. Or we're outperforming now. So it's that next level, right? And do it with the engaged culture and do it with high customer satisfaction ratings. It's not about just achieving a revenue number. It's we will be, I'm not going to tell you because I haven't told my board yet and you'll publish it and I'll get in trouble.
So, you don't need to tell me the numbers, Jay.
Yeah, so we'll be significantly bigger than we are, but we'll be, you know, the supplier of choice or our customers will want to keep buying services from us because we have great NPS scores or whatever the measurement happens to be at the time that we're using. And we're working with a highly engaged group of people. You know, those three things, and I say it in that order, but then when I talk about it internally, it's engage your people. Engage customers. But you know, when you talk externally, you always start here, and then when you talk internally, you go, no, you get the people thing right. That is the most exciting thing in the next 12 months, is that the business is running, just getting the people engaged and on board, you know, so that they deliver great stuff for our customers. And then the revenue stuff is easy, but it just happens, right?
Yeah, nice. And if I was, and I'm not looking for a job, by the way, but
no.
If I was sitting there and thinking about the culture, and that sounds quite appealing, right? To me, what I'm driven by, I would find the growth journey, the stretch. But if you were there's an applicant sitting in front of you now and they're motivated, driven, all the above, what would be the thing you'd be looking into for them and what do you think they'd seek in you?
Sure. In them, not being afraid of change. So when I turn around and say that we're going to get 100 million today and we're going to be five times that in 3 years, that's not easy. You go, well, that's a lot of work. So there's going to be a lot of change. Yes, you're absolutely right. So sometimes we get told we think the business is moving too fast. And there's a nature of the business, nature of the industry. If you don't run this quickly, you stop to be in this industry anymore. So there's an element we have to. So I'm looking for someone that's either done that before, or when I say to them, and it's not about working, you know, 80 hours a week. You know, we don't need that. We just need you to be accepting that things will change and be excited by that. And that's most, as you said it, and that's why I'm here, right, is that I'm excited by the growth. I'm excited about what we can achieve. I'm excited about delivering what we do for more people. So I'm looking for that. What are they looking for in me? Someone at least.
Or in your business.
In my business, yeah. Or in us. I mean, it's at least we're honest along the way, right? You know, they're honest up front when you're coming in. We don't lie about we don't sort of go, you know what, it's all perfect here. Yeah, we don't do that. We know it's hard. You know, the hardest thing working for us right now, sorry, everyone, is, you know, we bought too many companies and we have a whole bunch of systems that we're trying to integrate. Yeah. That's really difficult. You don't get to come in and just work on one thing. You have to come in and look at five different things. But that's okay, because last week it was 10 different things, right? And that's what we're doing, right? So we're all that's consolidating. It's not finished. And as I often say to people, I said, by the time we get it done, I'll lob a hand grenade over. I'll go buy something else. We'll go pick a new product and off we go, because it never stands still.
Yeah.
Once we're nailing that, you know, or we're just about to, we'll throw in another thing, right? Because you never stand still.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things I was reflecting on, and I think this is a nice way to look at our discussion today, is your career has been revolved around a lot of change. And if anything, without that change, it doesn't allow you to grow. And a lot of the stories you talked about, integrating systems, simplifying systems, improving ways of working, you know, pivoting and adding on something that we didn't expect to have, but now we do, whatever it is, I don't know what's on the cards, but the reality is I'm thinking those words in my head when I consider your journey. They're great career makers. Do you look back at your career like that and say, those are some of the things that have made me who I am when you look at your history?
Yeah, look, I was, I'd say, very lucky. I mean, or I chose right, or, you know, I worked hard and off we got. I mean, I look at my own role, and the same thing I say to my children is accept every role you're given, right? You know, I was the best photocopier with an engineering degree at Telstra, right? It was fantastic. but learn something from that. Read the plans. Understand what you're doing. You know, don't just go, oh, this is boring. Don't knock back anything. Take any possible opportunity to learn something that's either part of your role or not part of your role. Because I think about all the things I've listened to over the time as I'm sitting in a role learning about something in finance. It made no sense to me at the time when I'm doing that, but it makes a lot of sense to me now. Right, you never know that, right? So learn everything you possibly can. What did you ask if I was lucky? No, I think I just worked really hard and chose well. And, you know, when I wasn't happy and things weren't, when we moved on, and I haven't had that many jobs. I've only worked for like four companies in the past. And
I wouldn't say lucky. I think, do you think you've leveraged those challenges? And is absolutely. That, do those challenges actually, rather than being a threat, they're an opportunity?
No, absolutely, yeah, an opportunity, yeah. Right? And there's the hard things first by Ben, whatever his name, the great CEOs just don't quit, right? Great manager. When it's hard, God, no, lean in, right? That's because, what is it, you know, how many percentage of small business fail or how many percentage of business fail? I said, yeah, because it's hard. Yeah, it is hard. And you've just got to keep going, right? And I often say to people two things. One, most of the time we're not saving lives, because that would be incredibly difficult and stressful because it impacts people. So look, if we make mistakes, people are generally forgiving. So
it's the way you respond to those mistakes.
The way you respond, you know, and being open and transparent and not trying to hide them. I mean, most of the time that anyone's ever gotten themselves into trouble was not being upfront as fast as they possibly could, right?
Yes.
So don't worry about that. And then that's probably the main thing, right?
Just, yeah. Well, that's what comes with fast change.
Yeah.
There's going to be things that break along the way.
We absolutely break lots of things along the way.
Mm.
Hopefully not people.
No, we don't want that. But they've got to run with it. Now, final question. How do you see yourself evolving over that time?
Look, I'm learning more about parts of businesses that I've never known before. Things about, you know, how to focus on growing companies that aren't just, you know, the same thing. So we're on a massive growth journey. I get to learn that. Learning to work with different people, obviously helps. And I spend a lot more time reflecting on my own leadership style and what works and what doesn't. And then, every single day I get to learn something new, which is actually what drives me, right? Like I'm an expert in some field and it's not actually being a CEO. So I've got to a certain point where, yep, I've got this under control. Okay, now what's my next challenge? I don't know what happens after this. I guess it's, I'm part of sort of other forum groups and other CEOs. And so it's about, learning from them and sharing and also me teaching them. Yeah. That's sort of where you move to, right? When you get to this stage of your career.
Because there's only so many job titles you can get, right?
I think I'm done, right?
You've done that part.
I don't know where it is from here. Look, yeah. Not that I'm planning on leaving, right? Like I've got kids in school. I often say to people, I said, look, I'm in for the long haul. Mm. Hopefully, in this place, right? I really enjoy what I'm doing. Mm. I really enjoy the people I'm working with. I'd love part of when they say, oh, why did you join this company? I said, I want to be proud of what we achieved, right? Yeah. That's the thing that drives me.
Yeah.
Building us something that makes us proud. Building a company that makes us proud. Building a network that makes us proud.
Yeah. You can sit back later on and that's your legacy. You can really hold on to that. It's a nice why. I did say final question, but is there anything I should have asked today that you think would have been, and we should talk about it. That's a really important thing for the audience to understand or maybe learn from in terms of your journey and the stuff we've been talking about today.
No, you're actually really good at your job, so well done. I think the parts that I always like to make clear is never be afraid to ask for help. That's the hardest thing as a CEO you find. Never be afraid to say you don't know. Like I can't come into a room and say I don't know what I'm doing 100% of the time. I'll lose my job in a heartbeat, right? But knowing when it's safe, knowing when to lean in and those sort of things, it is a very lonely job at the top. You don't always get to say what you mean. You have to wear the masks from time to time. I'm grateful that I have such a supportive at home and at work sort of thing that I get to, I don't have to do it all the time, but it is a difficult job. So never be afraid to lean in. That is by far the only message, because I've seen people struggle with it, right? The pressure and everything else, and they fail in the result. Like they don't get the result because they didn't go, actually, you know what? I didn't know this. I should have just asked for this.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be too brave.
Don't be too brave. Yeah. And that's not something that I did, from the moment I stepped into this role. I walked in going, well, who am I going to ask? That took me, I'm here for what, for 4 years? And it took me at least two before I went, oh, wait.
Yeah. And it sounds like the other thing around what you've shared there is have a good network around you.
Absolutely. So from what you said before, small business founders and those sort of things, there are plenty of resources out there. Don't be afraid to, find other groups of small businesses, find some kind of advisory board. Don't go too deep. Don't go take your company public and get a proper executive board. That's probably taking it far. But,
at the right time, obviously.
The right time, obviously, do it. But if you are going to do that, what's the first thing you do? Go find someone that's done it before.
Exactly.
Just as if you want to do something, look around. Has anyone done this before? And you know what? You get, I know I don't mind. If someone reaches out to me and say, hey, you've done this. I'm really interested in doing this. Can you tell me about this? And we go, sure. I'd love to talk about myself and what I've done. We love doing it.
Yeah.
Provided, I'm not competing with you. I'm more than happy to share what, and even if I am, still more than happy to share what I know, right?
It's so interesting you say that because I always have the conversation with people, who are wanting to learn something. So the first thing is, have you spoken to someone? Oh, they, do you think they'd help me? Do you know how nice it is to have, think about if I come, and I always ask that, if I go to you and ask the question, person who's got a problem, and I know you're really good at X, what would you do? Would you reject me?
No.
And they never say, well, of course you wouldn't. Well, it's the same for simply because you have a particular title or a profile or you're not in a deep relationship yet. That's how it starts, right? Yeah. It's a good one, particularly for those coming up their career. I think it's really important to understand. Well, Alex, you have been amazing. I think there's heaps in that. We probably could have gone down 1,000 other rabbit holes, but in reality, I think we learned a lot about you as a leader. I think we learned a lot about Swoop and your culture and what you're about. I think there's a really exciting journey there. And while we didn't go into the nuance of all your products and services, I think what we really wanted to learn about today was what brings it all together. And that's your people, and that's the way you approach problem solving and the way you approach culture development. Because as you said, without that, all the other things don't happen anyway. So, mate, that's been a real pleasure. I've enjoyed it. And I do wish you and your management team and the broader team success in building what you're trying to build.
Thank you. It was fun.